At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
As we've seen in so many cases, killers taking trophies. Why do they do that is the question to those of us who are not killers. It seems a little bizarre. It's like, well, you did this. You probably don't want to get caught. So having anything from them in your possession may not bode too well should someone look into you. But again, that makes sense to most of us because we're not killers. To them, it makes perfect sense. Here to help us kind of understand that and I guess try and make some sense of it, Siobhan Scott is joining us. She's a psychotherapist and an author, author of the book, The Minds of Mass Killers, Understanding and Interpreting the Pathway to Violence. Siobhan, I want to go with this on the Koberger case, because now we know that allegedly, if he's the killer, he's also a trophy keeper with the IDs that have been found in his possession that were not where they should have been with the residents of that King Road house after the murder.
Yeah, you know, we often talk about these kind of sexual sadistic murderers. And if Koberger did do this, that's the kind of murder it is. He was motivated by sexual attraction. And whether or not he committed any sexual offense or perpetration on anybody's body at the time, it's the memory of the violence that's sexually stimulating for a person like that. So that's why they save, you know, whether it's called a trophy or a souvenir, they tend to save things from the victims because they use those objects later on to reenact the memory of the crime. And that's where they get the sexual gratification. So that doesn't surprise me. Again, it would indicate he's, as a criminal, he's not a very smart criminal to keep something like that. But that is sort of the MO, that's what they tend to do.
Is it often that they keep something that is easily, I mean, there's nothing I think more recognizable than belonging to someone else than their ID? Are IDs a common one that people take, or is it more so inanimate objects, things of that nature, which if you don't know whose it was, you wouldn't know whose it was?
Right. Probably more often that it's a personal inanimate object, some jewelry or, you know, undergarments or something like that. But there certainly have been some. I know that the California Golden State Killer did remove photographs of the victims at times and take those with him. So it happens, but something obviously that I would say the person whose ID he had, this may have been the person that was his primary target in the murders that night. Because as we've thought, that there was probably one of these young women that he was primarily attracted to, and the other ones that were present were just collateral damage.
It's easy, I think, to look on the outside and say, you know, he was attracted to one of them or more than one of them. But how do we know that? How do we know that the taking of the object was sexual in nature? Is that just how these things are? Is that just how the mind works?
Yeah, it is just the pattern. It's, you know, the sexual pleasure comes for months before the actual event happens because they're anticipating it and they're masturbating, frankly, while they're anticipating it. And then they commit the murder. They try to create their perfect scenario, you know, which is usually sadistic violence involved. And then the pleasure continues after the crime because they continue to masturbate with the personal items of the victim. So it's a very strange thing. And again, for normal people, it's hard to wrap our heads around how could this be pleasurable. But this seems to be a pattern that we've seen hundreds of times.
Help us wrap our heads around that, because obviously this is not the first time we've heard of a case like this or someone that does this sort of thing. What is it? Is this some sort of trauma response from something that happened in childhood? How does one find sexual pleasure in things like this, things like murder, things of stalking, things of that nature? I mean, it's one thing to look at these girls and go, yes, they were attractive young women. But when it goes to this dark place of sexual gratification in the form of murder, how does one get there? Is there a recipe for this with people in general, or is it different in case by case?
Yeah, we'd love to know what the recipe is, right? Because if we knew, then we could stop it. I think it's probably a culmination of a variety of things. And yes, probably different to some degree with every person that develops this way. It clearly starts early in life. We do know that little boys who are 10, 11, 12 years old, who eventually grow into this kind of sadistic behavior, they'll start having violent fantasies, violent sexual fantasies very young. Why they do that? Sometimes some have said it was exposure to violent pornography at a really young age, and that influenced them. They became aroused. And then that sort of is how their brain patterned, that they needed that kind of stimulation in order to be aroused. Other times we really never can pin it down. And, you know, is it something in the wiring? It's quite possible that for a very small number of people, they're just not quite wired right. And then perhaps they're exposed to something in the environment. Perhaps they were sexually aroused at a time that they were being punished. That's been another theory. But again, it's really hard to prove these things, especially when we're going back in someone's life 20 or 30 years previously and trying to fit the pieces together.
Yeah, I mean, it is such a bizarre thing, but obviously it is a thing. Is it part of our, you know, our wiring in some way, shape, or form, you know, almost, you know, going way, way back? Is this kind of the Stone Age parts of our minds that somehow have that wiring there, where it was much more, you know, you were out, you were fighting to survive left and right, and then, you know, there would be sexual gratification, you know, for the person you provided for or something. Is it kind of the monkey brain in us going way back?
Yeah, yeah, it sure could be, because these more primitive parts of the brain get in our way in a lot of different ways. You know, a lot of the non-rational aspects of human behavior. Why do people drive ridiculously fast sometimes? Uh-huh. When thinking wise, we know this is not safe, this is dangerous. But, you know, you'll see particularly young men driving recklessly, causing so many car accidents. It's non-rational. And I do think that we still carry a lot of primitive parts of the brain, if you want to call it the caveman brain or whatever, that don't make sense. And we're certainly not all wired the same. You know, we're very different. We may look a lot alike on the outside, but you get into people's ways of thinking and perceiving, and you see these dramatic differences sometimes. And it's really hard to sort out why some people just take these really aberrant turns.
If someone has this sort of wiring and they recognize it, but they're not a killer, they just know that for whatever reason, you know, this is what gets them off, if you will, watching violent material or things of that nature. Is there help for somebody like that? Or is this something where this is how you're wired, you really can't unwire it? If this is how, you know, your stimulus is that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, that's a big part of what we try to do in therapy, is help people see if they have patterns that are self-defeating or destructive or causing harm to them, or certainly if they're going to cause harm to someone else. The big thing, as you mentioned, is if they're aware of it and they're willing to talk about it. I think we can work with almost anything. And over time, I do think patterns change. And when we talk about people changing their patterns, whether that's smoking, drinking, driving too fast, you know, whatever, patterns can change, and we are rewiring the brain when that happens. But again, as you know, it takes motivation. Somebody has to really want to work on their ways of thinking and change the kinds of behavior that are causing trouble for them. And certainly, probably the illest people or the most destructive people are not the ones that are motivated to do that work.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your insight on this case. Always very much appreciated. Siobhan's book, The Minds of Mass Killers, Understanding and Interpreting the Pathway to Violence. Do check that out. My name is Tony Bruschi. Be sure to subscribe or follow us wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any breaking updates and discussions on the cases that we got for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.